Probably get started, even though there's some folks we expect to still attend, and we're not sure if Dennis is going to make it because I understand he was ill, but most of our resource people are here. Oh, there he is. He's back with back in the land of the living. Good morning. So welcome, everyone. Let me set the table for this a little bit and then go around for introductions. The purpose of this work session is really to report back to the council about the concerted effort that a lot of people have been making around managing public spaces. And there are things big and small at work out there in our public right-of-way that this group have been working together on. There are risks and downsides that we're trying to manage. As you remember, 2 summers ago, we had a skateboard assault that was worrisome to a lot of people. And then this summer, we had a stabbing death that was terrible, you know, on the streets of our central city. So there are real public safety issues out there. No one's immune from the effect of lawlessness. And in fact, homeless people are among the most vulnerable to the outbreak of lawlessness when it occurs. So we tried to take a holistic and fresh approach to some of these issues and the work that we're going to hear about this morning. I instructed my office to work with all the relevant bureaus and look at how our toolkit of policies and services work and how it can be tuned to work better. We've also had, under Commander Day's leadership, the Police Bureau has been doing quite a bit more with foot patrol, and we'll be hearing from him and Sergeant DeLand this morning. We also really want to put some questions before the community and the council today, in addition to reporting back, and that is what we're doing a good approach? What should be expanded? How would we expand some of these efforts if we do? What resources are needed to make this effort work better? So we have a series of partners and presenters here this morning to report back, the Police Bureau itself, business associations, service providers, some residents and neighbors in Hawthorne that have been working particularly well with the Police Bureau and the Foot Patrol program. So we have some panels queued up to speak to us and to take the discussion forward, and then time for us to discuss and probe into all that work a bit more. So again, I want to thank everyone for being here this morning. I think you know who the four of us are, but maybe Jackie, if you could go around the room and tell us who you are and what your role in this work is.
Or a microphone. Thank you and good morning, and appreciate everybody being here today, and thank you, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. Jackie Dingfelder, and I'm a lead staffer for the mayor on this effort around sidewalk management.
And Bob Day, Central Precinct.
And I'm Rick DeLand, Sergeant of the...
There we go.
Sergeant Rick DeLand, Central Precinct, Foot Patrol.
My name is Israel Baer, and we've been working with the mayor's office and the police on this for the past year or so.
I'm Mark Jolin. I'm the director at JOIN, and similarly have been part of this effort over the last couple of years.
Ty Berker, current chair of Clean and Safe.
Mark Schlesinger. I am with Schlesinger Companies, downtown property owners and managers of property.
Paul Fishman, resident and member of Hawthorne Neighbors.
Dennis Lundberg, Associate Director for Janus Youth Programs.
Debbie Kitchen, President of Central East Side Industrial Council.
Buddy, and with that, we might want to ask the Police Bureau to take their presentation, part of the presentation, forward.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Was about this time a year ago when I remember standing in the lobby with the mayor and some other police command, and I believe Chief of Staff Gail Shibley, and discussing options and anticipation as we reviewed the summer of 2013, looking forward to the summer of 2014. And and how we were going to address matters. And this topic came up. It's not a new idea, the idea of getting officers out of their cars, engaging with the community, learning what community needs are, and responding to that. It's been around for a long, long time. But I feel like Central Precinct was really ripe for that opportunity and began to strategize in the winter months about what it would look like going into the spring. So I don't take credit for this as some, you know, brand new approach to police work. I think it's a return to basics, and it's a huge credit to Sergeant DeLand and the officers that participated in this in the summer, as well as all of Central Precinct that really supported this effort and the partnerships that we'll talk about. So certainly Sir Robert Peel's quote, "The police are the public and the public are the police," is really where we want to start in terms of our focus and our efforts going forward. We laid down a vision that was to build and improve relationships and partnerships across the wide spectrum of our community. As we all know, we have a very diverse city with a lot of passion, a lot of empathy, a lot of good work that's done on a regular basis. And so the need for us and the police bureau to sort of connect across that wide spectrum was really important to me and important to us as a team. One of the things we learned this summer was that relationships take time and they take energy. There's a lot of emphasis on the police bureau to continue to build community relationships, which I'm an advocate for, but I learned this year that, you know, those are labor intensive. And this year we spent, these officers invested a lot, not just physically, but emotionally, mentally as well, working through the challenges that we face and trying to help encourage, you know, a better community. So as we go through this presentation today, I'm going to be emphasizing the relationship piece of it, both with social service partners, internally, relationships even within the police bureau, Central Precinct, officer to officer, sergeant to sergeant, the great work done by Jackie and the city bureaus that came together on a monthly basis for the public spaces management meetings, and the support of the mayor and the commissioners. This has really been an impressive effort by a lot of different folks. We'll also, as we go through this PowerPoint quickly here this morning, there's going to be numbers, statistics. I've asked Sergeant DeLand to join me just because he is really the expert on some of those numbers. And when I'm finished, if you want to go back and get some clarification on those, I'm more than happy to do that. The foot patrol, 10 officers and a sergeant. We picked that number just because that gave us about the best coverage for essentially 7 days a week. I generally worked in the afternoon shift hours from roughly 2 to 10 or midnight. Kind of a little background on them, variety of years of service, enhanced crisis intervention team officers, a couple officers that are part of the homeless youth continuum liaison, a couple of field training officers. So we felt like we had a good spectrum. You know, these officers were asked to participate. Some of them are sitting here with an understanding that we were going to be challenging them to look at the job a little bit differently and approach things a little bit differently. And I really appreciate that they accepted that challenge, really embraced it. The foundation of this effort really, once again, is not complicated. Communication is where it starts. I believe that there's power in knowing somebody's name. I believe there's power in community and, you know, officers generally drive around and address problems and see issues and concerns, and we do it very well. But sometimes taking the extra effort and the extra time to actually connect with the individuals, to understand what their needs are, what their concerns are, and maybe trying to see it from their perspective can get us to the same resolution versus, you know, strictly an enforcement standpoint. I want to emphasize that a lot of officers are doing this already throughout the city. But we created an environment where we were freeing up these officers' time to be able to do that more intentionally. And, you know, one of the examples that Sergeant DeLand used even last night in a community presentation, you know, if as a parent all you ever did was address your kids when they were wrong and never paid attention to them otherwise, that probably would not be considered good parenting. Police are by no means the parents of the community. That's where the analogy breaks down. But the concept is the same, where if the only time we interact with folks is when they're doing something wrong, then how are we able to have an impact? So really beginning that communication, which leads to understanding, which leads to trust, which leads to the mutual support and respect and the personal accountability. And that was really our emphasis in this relationship building. And I want to stress that personal accountability is a two-way street. we learn from that ourselves. It's not just about us holding people accountable, but it's us being accountable to the commitments that we make, the promises that we make. If we say we're going to follow through, if we say we're going to make an effort to try and get somebody in housing or treatment or something, there's a level of accountability there that goes on our end as well. And from an enforcement standpoint, if we say this behavior is not going to be tolerated, and if you do this, you could be arrested or charged, it's important that we follow through. So we learned about personal accountability both ways. And I think many of the people at the table who interact with this population that we're talking about today largely would agree that they've seen that, hopefully on both sides, we've learned that as well. So that communication, understanding, trust, support, respect, and accountability were really the core. We identified two locations for primary emphasis, really, and this wasn't rocket science. This was just the commander saying, here's where I think we can maybe begin a starting point. And a lot of the issues over on Hawthorne mimic a lot of the problems and concerns we have down around 3rd Avenue the last couple of years. And so we identified both Hawthorne area from about 23rd to 48th, and then 3rd and Oak kind of out from there, with 3rd and Oak sort of being the center of where we would start our work and kind of spread out from there. You know, one of the lessons learned, downtown is so large, and that sounds obvious, but, you know, our work at Hawthorne really concentrated, really able to, you know, connect on a deeper level with some of the businesses and community out there. Downtown is just, I think we underestimated the scope and the size. So I'm kind of reevaluating how do we better manage downtown. But we really made a concentrated effort in those two areas. We'd be remiss as an organization if I didn't bring you statistics. You know that, Council. We've been down this road before, but we tried to do a better job of capturing information. Police Bureau historically does a lot of good work, but doesn't always capture exactly what that looks like. These are very broad numbers, and once again, we can come back later in the session and visit them more specifically. But the business contacts, a little over 1,000 business contacts. These are repetitive. These are not individual. So, you know, we may have gone to the same business 3 or 4 or 5 times. That's added in here, so I don't want to make it bigger than it is. But we did keep track of, you know, who we were talking to, number of times we contacted, interacted with folks. Same thing with subject contacts. You know, over 2,100 people, but many of those could be, you know, repeated contacts, so they're not necessarily individuals. This is from this, yeah, from April, from, excuse me, from March until, Rick, was it the end of October?
Yeah, these numbers reflect. Originally, we started with myself and two officers the 1st of March, and then we went to full strength the 1st of April. These numbers reflect from essentially March 1st to October 31st.
As you notice, you know, number of arrests, 227 arrests out of that 2,100 subject contacts, you know, multiple warnings, but by far, you know, percentage was based upon there was no enforcement action. And, you know, I want to make it clear, I'm a proponent of enforcement. There's a role for the police in enforcement. But my message to the team this year going out was that's not going to be our first go-to. You know, we're going to try and, as going back to the vision statement about we're going to try and have a relationship, we're going to try and build community understanding. If there's an enforcement component, we will deal with that. This doesn't represent a whole lot of new charges. Several of the arrests were simply warrants, things were already in the system, which, you know, we serve and kind of help get people squared away and get that stuff straightened out. So, you know, I'm not opposed to the fact that sometimes we need to make arrests, but I'm pleased with that we were able to have the success we were with limited amount of enforcement. The next graphic is, you know, once again, just highlights the fact that, you know, 66% of these conversations were just a result of conversations. There wasn't a enforcement nexus to it, a criminal nexus to it. It was just a matter of engaging people for their contact. You know, we've changed a lot of our terminology. I think there's power in words. And you've heard the Police Bureau in the past use terms like sweeps and cleanups and efforts like that. I believe, and I'm not saying this just for the sake of saying a word, but changing it to a term of using outreach and, you know, assistance and understanding so that we can, you know, really partner with a lot of the great work that's already being done. And that's was a huge lesson learned for us this summer, partnering you know, specifically with Janice and with Join and the great work Dennis and Mark are doing, but several different social service providers, again, understanding of what's available. We did presentations to the Union Gospel Mission, you know, a lot of different organizations coming alongside, and that educated our officers who are out there, you know, 7 days a week to be able to articulate and understand and explain to people in need, here's services, here's opportunities for you. You know, those 126 referrals, that's not like, hey, if you want to get something to eat, you need to go here. 126 referrals are people that we actually connected with physically somewhere. So we drove them to Outside In. We made sure that they got, you know, maybe as simple as getting a rabies shot for their dog, but engaging them with Multnomah County so that they know how to get their dog vaccinated so that it's, you know, safe on the streets as well as legal. So when we say 126 accepted, those are literal, tangible examples we can point to, which I'm very proud of. Quickly here as we finish up, we did a survey prior to, and then we did a survey at the end. So we did a survey in the spring, we did a survey last month. Once again, I'm not a statistician, so to speak, so we came up with some questions we thought were reasonable, would sort of gauge where people were at. The responses could be strongly agree, neutral, disagree, and strongly disagree. And then the five questions we asked about, do you feel safe walking your neighborhood day and night? Serious crimes are well addressed. Order and livability issues are well addressed. The police responsive issues in your neighborhood. Is the city responsive issues in your neighborhood? And police presence is positive in your neighborhood. And you can see, particularly over on Hawthorne, we had 70. How many did we have respond back?
71 in the second survey.
So we had 71 surveys. We went door to door. We handed those out and then recovered them personally in the Hawthorne area. And we had 70 plus respondents backed, and you know, saw an increase, you know, double digit increase percentage wise in the overall appreciation sense of what the work that we're doing over on Hawthorne. The next slide is just, you know, some of the survey comments, which you can read, but, you know, encouraging additional comments made on the survey sheets returned to us, just people's information or perspectives. I really appreciate that last line. You know, I watched the police interact with people this year, and the effect was amazing. You had a personal experience. I'll digress for a second, where I was off duty, and my bride and I went to three doors down there at 37 in Hawthorne for happy hour, and a couple of our officers were sitting at the Starbucks there, and so I went by and was engaging them in conversation, and a citizen came up who lived right there and began to talk to them and about what they were doing and the type of work they were doing and his concerns. And it was interesting because I'm just standing there in shorts and a T-shirt. He has no idea their boss is standing there, and he's kind of interrogating them about the type of work they're doing. And, you know, they'd say something, and they'd look at me, and they'd say something, they'd look at me, you know, and it was kind of back and forth. They were exceptionally professional and excellent. But the classic line at the end, the gentleman says, you know, we really pride ourselves on the uniqueness of this street, so we like to keep it just a little bit odd, and, you know, appreciated the work they were doing and left. And I thought, you know, that really sums up the challenge that I'm asking of these officers, is to kind of step into this different communities within the city on a regular basis and kind of manage expectations. But it was encouraging. The downtown impact survey, this kind of got away from us a little bit. The numbers are still favorable in terms of overall response, but we did not do a good job of managing how we did the survey the second time around. We used PPI officers to hand deliver, but we also did ask for an email to be distributed, which went far and wide throughout the business district and covered areas that we did not make intentional efforts in this summer. So unfortunately, that information doesn't reflect as strong of a response, and I think that's largely because it got watered down. Frankly, we got responses from, you know, 10th and Jefferson. I didn't see the foot patrol all summer, and that's correct. We were able to only focus our resources in certain areas. So those numbers are a little bit watered down. Once again, I've included some comments for the sake of moving along here that we can read, or you can read it at a later time. You know, crime reduction, and rather than really trying to dig down into every charge and every crime, we did a very apples-to-apples comparison. The basic use of a program called Cayman, where we simply took the geographic areas outlined on your map and just ran reported crime 2013, reported crime 2014. And so just apples to apples, without looking into what kind of crime or what kind of issues or anything else, these numbers reflect a sizable decrease in both part one and part two crime on the Hawthorne area. So, which is encouraging for two reasons. One, I mean, obviously that is a goal of ours for public safety. But two, typically we see an increase in reporting when we see a greater police presence. And a lot of times there's a spike because, you know, we're more engaged, more available, more aware, more proactive, et cetera. But to still see these reductions was really encouraging over on Hawthorne. And I said at the beginning, this was not our emphasis going into this year. It was not, intended to be about crime reduction and crime stats. I told several of the members of this table and community groups, at the end of the year, if we just sit back and say, you know, it was a pretty good year, I'm okay with that. But to have a good response as well as the reduction in crime is encouraging. In regards to downtown, you'll see part one crime plus 12%, part two crime minus 32%. That plus 12% is almost 100% related to car break-ins. We've seen a surprisingly large uptick in car break-ins. It's a problem that I'm aware of. It's something that we're paying attention to, but certainly had an impact on the overall numbers. And we're almost double from where we were last year, unfortunately, with car break-ins. And that really led to this spike in reported part one crimes for us for downtown. Overall, I still believe in the big picture, we're in a better place. But that's reflective of that part one crime number being higher. You know, there was some mainly in-house comments made, you know, about, well, this is all sort of warm and fuzzy. You know, we're just sort of, you know, holding people's hands. We're not really, quote unquote, doing police work in the traditional sense. And as I finish here, you know, we did have many significant cases this summer that we addressed. And what's all of these cases led to our success in prosecution was because we had those relationships. You know, we knew, for example, as the mayor had mentioned, this tragedy of the homicide at 4th and 4th and Sam and 4th and Taylor, that area, as soon as it occurred, they're contacting the central precinct officers saying, hey, do you know this person? You know this person? We've talked to them all summer long. So, you know, our job is to minimize risk. We're never going to eliminate risk. But I was really proud of the work that when we had these cases come up, they were able to be resolved quickly and, you know, successfully because of that knowledge and experience. You know, I put this slide in here at the end just because there is really not a whole lot new under the sun. You know, if we look back to City Council's resolution in 1989, promoting community policing, promoting and encouraging the police bureau to go in this direction, we've sort of changed the terminology from community policing to relationship policing. At the end of the day, I think it's really a call back to the way that we need to be doing our work. And finally, as we look at, partnerships and lessons learned, I mean, there's a whole list of folks on here, maybe some that were missed, but none of this would have been possible without the support and the work of both the people at this table and in the community. This was not simply the police bureau driving the bus. We were all in this together. The many city bureaus, once again, the monthly meetings that Jackie held, I've learned and have now relationships with PBOT, PDS, Parks, et cetera. That's really been beneficial. And, you know, as we look at lessons learned, I mean, this worked. I'm not a believer in sort of resting on our laurels. I'm not saying that we've solved all the problems, that there's no new ideas that we can't try. But it did work this summer in a broad sense. You know, the partnerships are crucial. The positive impact on the officers and the community was really encouraging to me. The officers and those that are involved in this, if we had time for their stories, I think you'd be really moved at the things that they learned, the experiences they have. And we also learned that perceptions can be changed, both for us, I think for the citizens that we're contacting, as well as for the greater community. So wouldn't be a Bob Day presentation without a football quote, but individual commitment to a group effort, that's what makes a team work, a company work, a society work, a civilization work, from great Coach Lombardi. So that's a quick overview. I know we've got more time today, and I really want to hear from other people at the table, but thank you.
Thanks very much, Commander.
Commander, I have a couple of quick questions. And first, I just want to publicly thank you for how responsive you've been on this issue, and not just in crafting this policy, but in responding to phone calls and emails as situations arise and the thoughtful way you're addressing this. I was struck by your data sheet, and it seems to me it's also going to be relevant information when we do a deeper assessment of whether the Park Ranger program is succeeding. One of the criticisms when Parks, now ably led by Commissioner Fritz, shifted to using rangers and away from Clean and Safe was that there'd be a decrease in arrests and that the model of policing would change. And I think one of the things we hoped is that there would in fact be a decrease in arrests because there'd be more upstream contacts, more relationship building, which would therefore obviate the need for an arrest and a harsher action. Your data suggests that in fact over 70% of your contacts lead to no enforcement action, but presumably some positive change in behavior, either referring someone to services or establishing some basic ground rules for how we share the sidewalk. So could you care to comment on that? Because I agree that upstream contacts that don't lead to arrests ultimately can be the most productive, but there are some who are going to look just at the data of arrests and say, well, arrests are down, therefore this is not as successful as it could be.
Well, and let me augment that. I think we want to hear from Israel and Mark and Dennis as well, and that is if you juxtapose the no enforcement action 71% and declined services 61%, what do you make of those two statistics? You're having lots of contacts. Some people are accepting services. A very large percentage aren't. Not arresting them, that's good, but that's not as good as it should be. So both from your perspective and also from the service provider's perspective, how do we improve that, the hydraulics of that?
So, Mayor, that's a very important question, but let me go back to my question because I don't want it to get lost in a compound question. I'd like to just start with share your interest in that one as well and making sure that our outreach is successful. But just to this question about, to those who are going to sometimes judge us on the basis of whether they're arrests versus no enforcement actions and contacts, could you just give us a little more commentary on that and why arrests are not necessarily a benchmark of a successful strategy?
Yes, sir. And I want to emphasize the fact, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, I think that enforcement is a proper role for us. There needs to be, you know, for lack of a better term, some bite with the bark. But, you know, the changing of philosophy, both, you know, in criminal justice or law enforcement nationwide is, you know, less and less about strictly enforcement and more about other alternatives. And I really believe in that. And I believe that, you know, Commissioner, to your point, whether it be the park rangers, whether it be, you know, businesses, whether it be citizens, whoever, you know, the power in having those relationships, the power in having that communication can influence behavior. It can change the direction that we're going. Now, it'd be a little bit naive of me to say that wearing this uniform and having those communications doesn't have any bearing on that. I think, you know, Dennis can speak to the fact, as we've talked before, sometimes I think the police underestimate the ability for positive influence because we're seen so often as a negative. So, you know, there is somewhat of an advantage speaking from the police standpoint versus a social service provider or an outreach worker, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you know, and specifically addressing the rangers and their model in the parks or our efforts, I absolutely agree that there's an opportunity there for us to, by having relationship, by having communication, by understanding the real issues, does not necessarily need to go to an enforcement piece.
And this does, I think, directly get to the mayor's point because, I mean, I walk around downtown in neighborhoods a lot, and I think I have a pretty good eye now for some of the bad actors. And the bad actors are engaging in illegal conduct. And we just ought to be very clear about that, take it off the table in terms of homelessness or other issues. They're engaging in illegal behavior. They happen to be on the sidewalks, and they need to be dealt with. But the irony in over-enforcement, where you end up capturing people that may not be the bad actors but are in a bad place, is that it makes it twice as difficult to address their needs. Because once there's an arrest and a conviction, Mark can't house them. And then we have to go to clean slate and wipe the slate clean to get them rent ready. So there is a consequence to using a law enforcement model to deal with certain kinds of behavior versus friendly persuasion. And you know, I like the idea of giving people warnings and then some tough love and some follow-up and some presence before we actually arrest and convict, because once we arrest and convict someone, even of a low-level crime, it makes it twice as hard then to house them, because a landlord will do a background check, it'll come up, then we have to go to clean slate to do that, and now we're just creating multiple barriers. So I appreciate your answer, and I know that when we take a look at the data on rangers and their contacts, we'll remember that, because frankly, giving warnings and building relationships and helping people curb antisocial behavior, I believe, is preferable than to arresting and then creating another set of problems for people where you may actually be able to reach them through the more informal approach. And so I applaud you for trying that.
Good. Well, I had a chance to spend some time on the street with Sergeant DeLand and some of his officers, and it was really impressive to see these relationships, and not just with the folks that were fixtures in the neighborhood, but also with folks that were just there to shop, or some of the young people that were out on the street performing music. You know, there was just a real sense that relationship had been built, and long before I got there, that it was already in place, already working. Heard a lot of positive feedback from a really wide spectrum of folks on the sidewalk. So it was really well done. I really appreciate how you did the work. We may have more questions about the Police Bureau's work as we proceed, but I know Israel's got a time constraint, so we might want to jump the schedule. Is that correct? You've got to leave fairly shortly, so we might want to have Israel talk next and then keep him as long as we can.
Thank you very much. Street Roots just wants to say that the Walking Beat Patrol has been a great success. We feel like this summer, I feel like it can be actually a national model that, you know, police bureaus all across the country are looking for formulas that may work to be able to solve some of these complex problems. So I feel like we're, in the 15 years that I've been doing this work in different urban environments, this is the best program that we've seen. So we're very happy to support the Walking Beat. A few things just to think about. I think if we want to take things one step further, I think that there are ways that we can continue to improve on the successes. One of them would be looking at the homeless court system and trying to bring together the district attorney's office, the public defenders, and the Multnomah County courts to think about how we can improve working with transition projects and others to be able to expedite the time between when somebody is given a citation or charged with a crime and the date in which they see a judge. You know, currently that system has rotating judges, and when we talk about relationships and how important they can be to build relationships over time, that system needs a standing judge to be able to build relationships with individuals to move them forward. And we can really capture a lot by trying not to, looking at different models. San Diego has a model in which they use social services as a way to, if you get a citation, basically you have to basically interface with a social service instead of a punitive approach, and it really takes away the barriers. So there's ways to improve there. I would like to remind people, you know, Street Roots has an interesting vantage point because we partner with so many other street newspapers around the country, and while I feel like this program did an amazing job, both King County and Denver County saw a huge increase in uptick in travelers this last year. And some would argue that is because of the legalization of marijuana. That definitely played a component. So, you know, we've talked to the mayor's office, and I know the others are looking at, as marijuana becomes legal and comes online. I know the King County City Attorney and District Attorney up there are working on a pretty intensive harm reduction model on how they can interface with people on the streets in a way that they're not overly charged once everything comes online. So those are something to think about. And then lastly, I would just say doing this has been a real honor for Street Roots to be able to bring together such diverse partners. And it's clear that when we all work together as a team, as the business community, nonprofits, law enforcement, that we can actually do something really good. And we're really proud of that. So I would just like to say that, you know, it would be a great tragedy as we move this program forward if I don't know how many people are aware, but Janus Youth was cut $130,000, I believe, for a federal grant for their street outreach downtown. So if somebody could run point and work with county officials and federal officials to figure out how to get that $130,000, at least as a stopgap measure, I think that we would be a lot better off for it, because it'd be a great tragedy to have the organization that's been advocating for this very model for a decade lose their funding in the same year that we are pushing forward. So, thank you.
Questions for Israel?
Israel, this rotation you mentioned about the judges, you're talking about the proceedings that are held at Bud Clark Commons?
That's correct.
And what's the normal rotation for a judge on that?
I don't know the exact answer to that, but I do know that they're rotating.
That's a good issue, Cobb County, because you know the cost per hour of a police officer or a judge or any other public service is the same. So it might be more effective, as you said, if there was a longer-term relationship and deeper understanding. So that's certainly something we can take up through our intergovernmental work with the county. Good point. Hadn't thought about the specific impact of marijuana in terms of what we're likely to see next summer in terms of a population on the streets. So probably obvious to others, but I hadn't thought through that consequence. Thanks for the warning. Great. Other questions for Israel? And maybe get you to comment while you're here on the question I posed, which is the percentage that are declining social services, your thoughts about that. I don't know if we've broken that down any further, but that seems like it's an awfully high number.
I would actually probably argue that's a good number. I think that the number doesn't account for the fact of how many people may already be engaging in services. So they may decline in officers' help for services at the specific time, but that doesn't mean they may not be engaging with Street Roots or Join or a multitude of different agencies. So it's really hard to get past that number into the weeds. So, you know, looking forward, it may be tacking on a question, are you already engaged with the service, to deeper understand that? Oh, it looks like that was already a question. Good job. it's a long road to hoe, and you know this stuff takes a lot of work. The traumatic experience of homelessness is something that you know, I think that both the police officers talked about and we talk about, is this is long-term relationship building, and it takes time to be able to develop these relationships from the trauma people are experiencing. So I feel like, you know, once we go 2, 3, 4 years to be able to look at those trends, we may be able to dig deeper, but it's really hard just on the first time. So
take your point. If they answer the question the first 5 times no, and the 6th time yes, then that's going to count, look bad statistically, but it's a great outcome. Yeah, thank you. Other questions for Israel? To the original schedule and then, okay. Yeah, good morning, welcome.
My name is Miranda Levin. I own Memento on 37th and Hawthorne for the last 4.5 years.
For being here this morning.
Thank you. Sorry I was late.
Okay, so let's go to the Portland Business Association Alliance report first. So,
So thank you, Mayor and Council, for the opportunity to be here at the table. And I just want to be able to say that we agree from Clean and Safe's perspective that there have been great strides made over the summer, and we are very appreciative of the efforts of the Portland Police, but do want to emphasize that there was still negative behavior, the homicide, the unfortunate homicide that was referenced already, and the fact that there are still pockets of congregations where the group activity, it allows the negative behavior to really foster and fester. And so one of the things that we would like to be able to emphasize is that the outreach and the community building and everything, all the positive strides that have been made, we still feel that all the tools need to be in the tool chest. So we'd like to emphasize that, you know, we're specifically talking about behaviors and not groups. And so being able to continue to allow our officers to engage effectively, but then also have the tools, if necessary, to modify the behavior. And so specifically what we're hoping to hear today is a discussion about expanding that existing tools to control those negative behaviors, such as designating more of the areas as high volume pedestrian zones, which has been effective around City Hall, around this building. And we at Clean and Safe gather the data that we can share with the group afterwards regarding the use of the downtown sidewalks that would fulfill the criteria for expanding the high-volume zones. And so it's a pretty simple voice of support that we have for the Portland Police, the efforts. It's a great one. Our Portland, the PPI officers that Clean and Safe has partnered with for many years, That is a very model of community policing. They are out there every day and would like to continue to support the Portland Police in their efforts as well. So in closing, it's just really looking to hear how that discussion can be expanded, what other tools could be brought to the table, and just using the resources that we have available to us. So thank you.
So you said you have data that would support designation of high impact zones per the current criteria in our code?
Yes, that is okay. That is correct. And we can, I think Linnea has some of those maps available that we could share with council.
Generally, where would they be? Like Morrison Yamhill and places like?
Correct. Those would be effective tools to help bolster, I think, the Portland police efforts. And so on the map, obviously, those zones that are exactly, so right around Morrison would be one with 18,100 as a pedestrian count. And then as we move down closer to the east side, again, still on Morrison. Morrison is a very active corridor where the pedestrian counts are much higher. And then basically Yamhill is another congregation point. So again, those zones are pretty, I think we have the anecdotal evidence and more importantly, we also have some of the counts that would support that as well.
So commissioners, you remember we don't actually have criteria in the code for that. And the way we set up where the pedestrian high pedestrian zones were before was to have a group that included people living outside. I'm wondering, is there somebody living outside or with that experience that's going to be part of this discussion today or moving forward? Have there been folks involved in this? I think that would be helpful because that was how we came to consensus actually on where the previous high pedestrian zone should be. And so once we walked around in a group of about 40 of us led by the PBA folks, we agreed on where they should be. So I think that would be the best way to move forward in my opinion.
Thank you. Other question about expansion, and that is any thoughts about expanding either the scope of services or the geography where Clean and Safe is operating now?
So the expansion of the bid hasn't been considered most recently. So currently, I don't know that there's an active discussion.
Ty, just curious about your response to those who may argue that if we expand this tool and we designate a particular street, what we in effect do is we displace it one street over. And for example, there are less people around City Hall today, but there are more people around Lounsdale and Chapman, both on the perimeter and interior. So there is always there's a cause and effect that we often see, and sometimes it's displacement. So how does that fit into your vision for how to expand the program?
That's a great point. And there's always the risk of displacement. But again, what we're, I think, very much an advocate for is being able to expand the ability for both the police and frankly, the city to have the ability to use tools to enforce behaviors on the streets. I mean, obviously, the great support that social services has given the Portland police for engaging in a more proactive manner, it has already resulted in great strides. And we're not saying that shouldn't be continued. In fact, just the opposite. That's a very effective tool. But more importantly, if they don't have the tool when negative behavior, because it's been congregated into a specific geographic location, that maybe they can't address it that way. Displacing it is always a risk, certainly, but if we're always chasing a problem, then I think that would give everybody a better opportunity to more clearly identify actors as well. So I think enforcement is always going to be part of our collective discussions, and if we're not actively engaging in the ability to designate those areas where concentrated problems have been documented, I think it's short-sighted.
How are we doing with providing places for people to be? I mean, it's definitely going to be displaced if there is nowhere for folks to go during the day or at night. So what?
Well, I don't think having a high pedestrian zone effectively says people can't be in a specific location, right? It's just a concentration, and therefore the geographic disbursement doesn't mean that people aren't being given an opportunity to be anywhere. It's just that what we're looking for is the ability to prevent collective behaviors that are negative. I mean, just because you have a zone doesn't mean that people haven't been, they're still here in the city. Just because they're not around City Hall doesn't mean they're not in the city of Portland, correct? So,
well, that's right. That's as Commissioner Fish said, the folks right. Who were on the sidewalk outside of City Hall are now on the sidewalk or in the parks just a block away.
So I guess I'm perhaps, sorry, Commissioner Fritz, I'm missing the question.
Where can people go who don't want to be outside during the day?
That is a great question that I think the merits a broader discussion with social service providers. Mm-hmm. So that I'm not sure that's germane to having a statutory code or other abilities for the police to be able to enforce.
Well, as when we did our long process in looking at should we renew sit lie and then deciding that it was unconstitutional, so we couldn't, it was part of a whole range of solutions. It wasn't just expanding the pedestrian zones or doing places where people could stand or sit or lie during the day or in the evening. It was a whole package of different things, including bathrooms and benches and things that some of which we've continued to work on and some of which we've not. So I don't want to lose in the focus on should we have more designated areas where people cannot be. We have to figure out where they can be. And in follow-up to the discussion earlier about why people would refuse the offer of social services, if they've been in the past connected with a social service and been told, well, the wait is a year, I personally might not sign up for it again.
Right. And I'm not suggesting that this is a panacea for all social ills. I'm just suggesting that it is a necessary tool that we should always keep in mind that is something for the group to use for the general benefit. So that's all.
Mr. Barker, on the PBOT is looking at PBA's request for high pedestrian zones, but just a point of clarification for listeners, the high pedestrian zone designation has been used to sort of as a safety measure to protect people who might, for example, be pushed into an oncoming MAX train because they're in a high pedestrian sidewalk and they're sitting on the sidewalk. It's not something that we use just to say, this is a high pedestrian zone, therefore people can't sit on the sidewalk. That's not how it was set up initially.
Thank you. That's good clarification. Okay, let's give Mr. Schlesinger a chance to talk about his experience a bit, and then we'll move on and talk more about Hawthorne.
Well, I'd like to also add my thank you for assembling this group today. I think that the dialogue amongst council members about from our police force, from social services, it's all positive, as including the business community, and I would suggest also including in future discussions, because I hope this is the first of many, other people with social services as well as the homeless community. They should have a voice. They should participate in this. I think it's important. There never will be a panacea or one thing that just takes care and solves all of our problems. I had the personal experience similar to you, Mr. Mayor, this summer to once again do a ride-along. And my comments aren't necessarily to be attaboy, aren't they? Isn't everybody doing things wonderful? But I did get to experience the police working in an area that was pretty amazing, to watch them work with individuals in more of a social service situation, where when we don't have all the support we need from areas where these people do need mental counseling and things like that, to see them step in and to work with someone to then make contact through their resources right then and there, bring a social services individual on site that could come and help this individual. Fantastic. It's great to see that happen. We also got to experience talking to a family in Cooch Park who was walking through and said, we love this park. We live in this community. It's our neighborhood. What do we miss? We miss some of the things that I know Commissioner Fritz is trying to bring back with rehabbing some of our parks, some of the things that bring families into these wonderful places and help displace some of the bad activity and bad behavior that happens. When you have our community using these facilities in positive sorts of ways, that's important, and it's great to see. Having some sort of a, and how one enforces it, I don't know, a code of conduct that we all have to live by. Being in a situation, if I'm working or walking downtown, being able to enjoy a clear right-of-way path where I can get from point A to point B without feeling like I'm accosted as well. Not just me, but the people that come and visit our community. I got to speak with some families that were here this last fall for the major soccer game that happened here. And they're carrying one of our famous boxes of voodoo donuts. And, you know, watching them have to protect their children as they're being verbally accosted by some of our street people. I understand, again, we're not going to solve all these problems. But the more that our social services agencies can have the tools they need to help the people that want to be helped. How do we deal with the group of individuals that don't want the help and are here to cause the problems, that are here to cause the increase in car prowls? Giving our not only social services community but our police force the tools that they need that can help protect the citizens that are coming here and in to enjoy the city as well.
Thank you. Thanks very much. So I think actually, Debbie, you're next. Talk about your experience from the Central East Side this summer.
Great, thank you. We, on the Central East Side, our issues are, Debbie Kitchen, and I own a small business that's located on the Central East Side, and I'm a president of the Central East Side Industrial Council. We worked and have been communicating with Commander Day and their police officers. It's not so much a foot patrol in our case, but it's an approach that's very similar. They've been working with JOIN and other social service agencies to interact with people who are on the street and who are camping in many cases in front of businesses and on sidewalks and around the area. And there's been a great improvement. We feel that the ability of the police to come in and interact and bring social services and help with cleaning up some of the campsites in terms of just removing trash, that's been very helpful, and it has helped our businesses, and it's helped the situation in our district. It is kind of a matter, sometimes what happens is people just kind of are displaced and move to another location, and then that becomes a hot spot for some of the criminal behaviors, and often it is the homeless people, because they are camping outside, that are the most vulnerable. So we have a lot of concerns about this in our district, and have seen some hot spots that develop, but then with the neighborhood response teams, the police are able to come in, and just by being a presence there has led to a big improvement. So we're in support of continuing these efforts. We also would like to talk about what are the next steps. We understand that there is, there is a shortage, I think, of shelter space, and so that's one of the key problems that we would like to be able to be part of helping address. You know, I think that there's just a concern about where people can go at night and what the safety issues are related to that. So for us, we have seen a big improvement, and there are still some hot spots that continue to, around St. Francis Park, for example, there have been issues, and one positive aspect of that is that Catholic Charities is planning to put in some low-income housing development in that area. That won't happen immediately. It's going to be a couple of years down the road, but we feel that those kinds of solutions are very helpful and can help address some of the issues. Again, our concerns are, what else can we do? What can we supplement this approach with? Because I think it has been very positive, but it still is only helping with some of the problems. There continue to be issues for a lot of our businesses and residents in the district.
Debbie, can I ask you a follow-up?
Oh, Mike.
We had a big technology upgrade, so of course nothing works, so thank you. Debbie, I want to just offer you an observation, have you react to it. We're at the 10th anniversary, roughly, of a 10-year plan to end homelessness, and about, as the Oregonian reported the other day, about 12,000 people have been housed through that plan. And Sally Erickson's here, and a lot of people deserve credit for having driven that plan. But going forward, what we know is there'll be fewer dollars. The challenges are not going away. And some of the problems are harder because they involve mental illness, mental health issues, drugs. The Seattle experience is sobering. I think we are likely to, the marijuana thing is going to have an impact on our community. I think we can predict. The problem is getting, in some ways, more complicated, not less. So we're at a point where probably it's a great time to hit reset, which is what the mayor and Dan are doing with the county. It's actually called reset. They're looking at how to do things differently. So my sense is, if the President of the United States tomorrow said that in the wake of the next hurricane in New Orleans, that Portland had to find shelter for 2,000 people, we would convene, everyone in this room would take us about 2 weeks to figure it out, and we would house 2,000 people. And we would not say that we are concerned about how long they're going to be here. We would say we're proud to take our share of people who've been displaced by a natural calamity. And what we'd probably end up doing is we'd look at what are the barriers to using abandoned or underutilized schools, community buildings. We'd look at building code issues. We'd probably, my guess that if in no more than a month, we'd figure out all the problems and we'd make sure 2,000 people were housed. And we would be celebrated as a community that stepped up and did our fair share. Well, let's look at the problem slightly differently. There's on any given night about 2,000 people on our streets. most of whom would rather not be on their streets, and I don't have the scientific data on this, but I do talk to almost everybody I encounter on the street, and I'm always struck that I hear the same things. I'm hungry, I'd like a place to sleep, I'd like a chance to get off the sidewalk. I've never met someone who said that sitting on the corner in a cold night on a sidewalk is their preferred place to be. So if we embrace the same spirit that perhaps a Katrina generates of a national resolve to deal with a problem, and we apply the same logic here as people of goodwill are hitting the reset button, in a perfect world, what are five or six things you want us to consider? What are the big ideas that you think we're not embracing as we think about a concerted effort to double down in addressing this challenge?
Well, I would say what has already been addressed is partnerships.